This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm Tracy Barnett, your host and narrator. Heroes, we have the start of a brand new series for you today, and I'm very excited for you to hear it. You see, we're coming up toward the end of when I'm going to be the interim host of One Shot. We have a lot of pre-recorded audio, some games that James ran, and we have part of the audition process for the new host of One Shot that is going to be appearing here on the stream eventually. So, this is kind of a going away for me. I asked James if he would want to run one more game with me before I was no longer doing this. He said yes, because my only other appearance in the GM seat for One Shot was when I ran Iron Edit Accelerated a few years ago. So I asked James what kind of game he wanted. He said, a heist. I said, great. Back in my mind, I don't have any systems that I can think of that can do heists that haven't already featured on the network. So I indulged in a little bit of, well, self-indulgence, and chose my own Etic engine. Now, the Etic engine is the system that you have heard play out on the Puppet Strings feed, if you listen to that show, where I sort of designed the game live with Alex Flanagan and B. Zelda and Jeff Stormer, and it powers Iron Edit Reforged. But the system itself can be reskinned to do anything. So in this session, we do a heist. Or at least that's how we started it off. Anyway, this is called Into the Wizard's Tower. There is a lot going on. We have some amazing, amazing performers that were hand-selected by James, and I am really excited for you to listen to this. So with all that out of the way, let's get to the show. Hello, heroes, and welcome to this week's episode of One Shot. I am extremely excited in what will very likely be the last recording that I have here as an interim host. Who knows? There may be surprises down the road. We will find out. But today, we are playing a heist game that is powered by my own Etic engine. And I have an absolutely stellar, stellar group of players here with me. We are going to begin with the person who in Zoom is on my left. I have no idea if it looks like that to them, so it may be a surprise, but Aaron, hi.
Hello, hi. To me, I'm on your right, but okay. What are you gonna do? Hi, I'm Aaron Rain, and should I introduce my character?
Introduce yourself first. We'll get to characters in a moment.
Great. I'm Aaron Rain. You might know me as Crashly on Mystery County Monster Hunters Club, and I'm really, really excited to be here.
Yeah. And we have a tradition here on One Shot. We do an icebreaker question. So, Aaron, what is your favorite heist story?
Okay. I thought about this for a minute, and stick with me on this. There's an episode of The Golden Girls where Dorothy wins the lottery. She wins $10,000 on a scratch-off and then puts it in a pocket of a jacket. That jacket gets put in the donation pile. What? And they have to break in to get the jacket back from the shelter where it goes to. And listen, is it Ocean's 11? No. But they do have to talk to a security guard and fake their way in. And then they learn a valuable lesson, which is that they don't need that $10,000 as much as the people they meet. And mm-hmm. I don't remember much else about it other than feeling very melancholy while watching it and like, wow, they really, those old ladies learned a lesson. Which I think is what most good heists, I feel like that's at the end of most good heists.
That someone at least has learned a lesson.
that some old ladies learn a lesson.
Those old ladies learn a lesson.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
New rule, I think, for everybody telling about their favorite heist stories. Mm. We do, unless it is Ocean's 11, we do have to say, is it Ocean's 11? And then confirm that it is not.
Thank you.
That works perfectly. Heroes, you may have recognized one of those voices that just chimed in there. It's our own James D'Amato. Say hi, James.
I thought you were gonna go
to Strange Jack.
So I was like, I see this joke coming. I'm just gonna maneuver.
Bus swerved directly at you.
Hello, heroes. It's interesting to be on this side of the introduction. But I'm James D'Amato. I am the host of the Campaign Skyjacks podcast, the author of the Ultimate RPG Guide series published by Adams Media. And I guess coming up right now, around the time this is coming out, we are gearing up, I believe, we are gearing up for a Skyjacks miniseries called Skyjoust, inspired by sports anime. It follows teams of teenage, Griffinback jousting champions who are competing in a big championship. There's a lot of exciting stuff that's coming out for it. There's art that by now should be shared around everywhere. I guess maybe. Who knows? Twitter probably doesn't exist. I don't know where I'm sharing this art.
No clue.
But it's it's going to be good, folks. You're going to want a front row seat.
Fantastic. I'm excited to see all of that. I will have a hand in some of it, I'm sure, but I also will have baby stuff. So who knows? Again, the future is a murky mess. James. What is your favorite heist story, and is it Ocean's 11?
I was trying to think about my favorite heist story, and I think that's like one of those questions where too many options jump to mind for me to like whittle down which one's my favorite. So instead, I'm simply going to tell you about a heist movie that I don't think a lot of people have seen that I like very much. It is called Maiden Heist. It stars like Robert De Niro and William H. Macy, and I believe Morgan Freeman. And they play old men who work in and like are around a museum who have each fallen in love with one of the pieces of art. And they conspire to steal the pieces of art that mean so much to them. And like the film is just like about how these are really old, sweet guys who just care so deeply about these pieces of art, who are just so deeply affected by it. It's adorable. Now, is it Ocean's 11?
No.
But it is very sweet. And it really wants to grapple with, what do we own in terms of art, like that affects us? How much does it truly belong to us? And what do we do when people more powerful than us want to take away the beautiful things in the world? Mm-hmm. It's great.
That
do those old ladies learn a lesson?
I don't think I actually kind of think the old men get I don't remember if they get away with it actually. So I gotta say, I feel like you don't learn your lesson if you get away with the heist. How much of a lesson did you really
That's
learn
fair.
That you can get away with a heist?
Yeah.
That's a big lesson, actually.
That is a big lesson. That's another familiar voice that you just heard chime in there, and it's the one, the only, Jeff Stormer.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeff Storm.
Hey, Jeff.
I am one of the hosts of All My Fantasy Children on the One Shot Network, which is a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast powered by listener prompts. I am also the host of Party of One, which is an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing games. I also make games sometimes, and if you think back into the old times onto a website that used to exist called Twitter, you might remember me from some jokes about the great clown Pagliacci. That's me. Pretty much in a nutshell, that's the me. And I think I can't sum up who I am as a person better than those three things.
Fantastic.
He's like if that joke grew legs.
It's true. And then became depressed and then went to a doctor.
I got recommended to see himself of all things. It's amazing. Jeff, what is your favorite heist story?
My favorite heist story is one that is not one heist, but hundreds and hundreds of heists over the better part of 50 years. Let me tell you about my beloved, my beloved good friends Lupin and Jigen and Goemon and Fujiko and also sometimes Zenigata, even though he's technically a cop and chasing them. I love Lupin the Third with all of my heart. It is a thing that, like, it is every iteration of, I love every iteration of it on its own merits, even when they're vastly different. I love a woman called Fujiko Mine. I love Lupin. I love the green shirt, the red shirt, the blue jacket. I just, it's a series about like a bunch of weird, a bunch of weird bisexual disasters stealing things. And also Columbo's son shows up at one point and he skateboards.
Hell yeah.
There's nothing better than this. Is it Ocean's 11?
No,
it's not Ocean's 11. But it is delightful and fun and just profoundly weird, which are the things that I look for in entertainment.
Fantastic. Next, we have a performer, a gamer who is new to me, but I'm very excited to have on here. Jules, say hi.
Hi. What's up?
Say more than hi. Tell the people who you are.
Okay. Hey, I'm Jules. I'm the host of The Pod Has Been Cast, a sci-fi Dungeons and Dragons podcast. That's me. It's good. Listen to it.
Hell yeah. And what is your favorite heist story?
Okay, I'm going to say my favorite heist story is a heist movie that did not get enough love, I think, when it came out just a few years ago. I think it was largely ignored, and it's a fucking crime, if you ask me. It's called Widows. It stars Viola Davis.
I really thought you were going to say Ocean's 11. I was waiting for it. I was like, this is a build to it.
We are walking up to jokes and then turning the other way.
Power move is what it is. I'm sorry. Continue.
I'm full of power moves. All right. It's Widows. It's got Viola Davis. It's got Cynthia Erivo. Other famous actors. It's great. It's really fabulous. And it's not Ocean's 11, but fuck Ocean's 11. I hate those guys. Those pieces of shit. Watch Widows instead.
Awesome. And I would be doing at least myself a disservice if I didn't list my own favorite heist story, which is The Lies of Locke Lamora by Scott Lynch. It is a fantasy novel. It is the first of what is supposed to be a 7-book series. I believe the first 3 have come out. Scott has had some issues, and I begrudge him not the time he is taking to get these books out. But I've never read books where I was as tense and waiting to see what happened and what the twists were better than any movie that I've seen that does a heist. Like, it had me on the edge of my seat while I was reading a novel. And that is a unique experience for me. Is it Ocean's 11? No, but I think it's better than Ocean's 11. And you should absolutely go check it out. It's a delightful read. And I know that I based at least one RPG character off of a couple of the people in that book, because they just are so fucking cool. So much style, just amazing. So what we are doing today is we are, as I mentioned, playing a heist game. When I reached out to James to get another one last game in before I transition on, I asked what he wanted to play, and he said a heist. And I was trying to think of systems that we could do a heist game in, and a lot of them have already featured here on One Shot. And so I did the natural thing and I picked my own game because... Why not? So the Etic Engine is the system that powers Iron Etic Reforged, which you can hear the production of on... Jeff, what is the name of the podcast? Good God.
It's Iron Etic Reforged Puppet Strings.
Thank you.
And also Iron Etic Reforged The Bubble,
yes.
Which I believe is on the Iron Etic Puppet Strings feed.
I haven't edited it yet. It's not up yet. But Puppet Strings is, and that's the podcast where Jeff and Alex Flanagan and V Zelda and I worked together to develop what this system is. So the Etic Engine is a system that is designed for purely collaborative storytelling. It is designed to emulate the kinds of fiction that we see in movies and TV, in that we can frame scenes and tell them from whatever perspectives we want to. It has a lot of mechanical things that come from a lot of different places, and I really like what it does. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off and we're going to introduce the characters that we are playing today. And then we're just going to set up the first scene for this high fantasy heist we have going on. And we are going to we're going to see what happens. So, Jeff, why don't you do us a favor and set the tone by introducing the character you're going to be portraying for this session?
Absolutely. You know, we were talking about a fantasy heist. You know, we're robbing a wizard, and it really only felt right to go in one direction. So I am playing Dr. Aloysius Doc Splendiferum, who is a tinkerer. Doc wears a plaid suit. With a three-piece suit with a vest and a pocket watch. His gender is a room full of whirligigs, and his three details, every character in the Etic Engine has three details. My details, my excellent detail is, look at all my wonderful toys. My good detail is, I see the world is full of joy. And my fair detail is, my obligations I avoid.
Fantastic. Jeff, who would you like to have introduce their character next?
I would love to hear... Aaron, why don't you introduce your character next?
Sure thing. So I'm playing Flannel Lynn Yarn. My archetype is the brain. Gender is the sound of a scratching quill. My excellent detail is don't fight, think. My good detail is move over, I've got this. And my fair detail is machines are easier than people. And Flannel Lynn is a shorter of stature, sort of boxier framed middle-aged woman with mousy brown hair, a plaid shirt, and you know, some glasses that she likes to push up. She looks like someone who writes romance novels is how I picture Flannel Lynn. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And
maybe she does.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe we'll find out. That would be a delight. Who would you like to go next, Aaron?
How about James?
I am playing Betazam, the overpushed. He is, his gender is an extremely wet bus seat. And the important thing about him really is that he is a genie, like a straight up genie from a lamp. He cannot, like, he's got all this power, but he can't use it on his own initiative. Somebody has to wish for stuff. He is in the business of monkey pawing people. So you're probably going to regret whatever wish you get from him. And he, like, is sort of a wispy, almost like somewhat incorporeal being. And I think he's like a gross, liquidy, milky white. And he just has, he's got a weak jaw. And that's like kind of his most notable feature.
Magic, like a drippy, magic wills
you, yeah, go for it.
Magic wills you into existence, and you got a weak jaw. That's, yeah, that's sad.
Messed up.
All right, James, who would you like to see go next?
I have to go with my master, Jewel.
You better believe it. Hey, I'm playing Brett. Brett is gonna be the muscle in this operation. Brett's gender is the rock and the hard place. He's like a big, he's a big boy. He's got, I think, gray sweatpants and like a A-line t-shirt. Carries a gym bag with him. His excellent detail is a bull in a china shop. His good detail is thick, but thick. And fair detail is never skips leg day.
Wonderful. And I am rounding things out. Here I am playing Spender Thrift, who is the face. Gender is a shot of high-end alcohol. Excellent detail is silver tongue, empty coin purse. Good detail is never met a face that didn't trust me. And fair detail is a knife in the ribs is an effective argument. So when I imagine an Edic Engine game sort of in general, it always, throughout all of Puppet Strings and The Bubble, it always was presented in my mind almost like an animated feature, right? And so whenever the camera cuts to Spender, it always starts to look like an anime. His proportions are extremely long and extremely lean. Like when he's leaning up against a wall and has like one knee up and it's really pointy, right? He's just all angles and like lanky black hair that's over their eyes and like a cigarette hanging out of the corner of their mouth. Like that's Spender. Just a whole bunch of style and frankly not a whole lot of substance. So those are the people that we are embodying today. What we need to do, we should let everyone know, because the listeners should have the same information that we have, sort of who our target for this heist is. We answered some questions about this setup, I don't think we need to go through all the specific questions necessarily. Actually, God, as I'm looking at these, maybe we do. These are really good. Oh, these are fantastic.
Well, they are very good, but didn't we talk about this perhaps being bonus content?
You know, mm-hmm. They're there. And James is
and listeners, they're so good. They're so good.
They're a little juicy.
You can't live.
And so you need to go to patreon.com/oneshotrpg. Podcast.
Don't go to /oneshotrpg because that's the secret Patreon. That's a trap.
Yeah,
you will be attacked by javelinas. But if you go to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast, there you will find our Patreon. And that, this delicious piece of bonus content, that's so good. It'll make everything so much better.
This episode is great. It is free to listen to. It's a really free-to-listen experience. But, you know, if you want the advantage, if you're trying to win at listening to this podcast, you're really...
Which you should, with every podcast, be trying to win.
If you're not trying to win with your podcast, that's
a
mistake.
What are you doing?
Yeah, podcasts are a competitive sport. Get with the times. You need to win, and you do that by becoming a patron. You have to be the $5 and up. We'll get you access to the secret archive that has all of the bonus content, including all the character creation and all of the. You're going to find out about the stuff as we play. But the Edic Engine is predicated on the idea that as players, so we can have a cohesive experience, and we are all building context together. We sort of set up the end of the story and we play towards it. So we are attempting to steal something from the wizard, capital W wizard. What is it that we're stealing? Who would like to provide the answer to that question?
Aaron, you looked so ready.
Hit it.
I was like, who thought of it? But it was not me, but I love it. So we are stealing the fun snow globe of this wizard, which contains all the fun in the town that he's stolen away.
The wizard's fun snow globe.
Yeah, the wizard's fun snow globe.
The wizard's fun snow globe.
Exactly.
And spoilers, we're going to steal it. We know this to be true. Mm-hmm. This is the arc that we are playing towards. But the thing is, we do not know how that is going to happen. And we also don't know yet how this story kicks off. So I am kind of, because I am the primary designer on the system and because I'm hosting, I'm kind of in the GM seat, but this is going to be collaborative, so I'm going to step back away from that once we're all familiar with the procedure, but I'll start us off. We need to frame a scene. We need to have the five of us in some situation that we can begin playing through, and I think that the initial conversation of how we all decide that this is what we're going to do and why it's the five of us would be a really fun space to explore. Does that work for everybody else?
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So where is this taking place? Where are we all sort of huddled up together deciding that this is the plan. This is our grand idea. We are going to steal the snow globe from the wizard. The fun snow globe. The wizard's fun snow globe.
Might this be a fitness class that Brett is teaching?
I'd love that.
Or like the post fitness class snack drink. Like,
I would love it if this if this meeting has, if we have all walked in, maybe we see ours, maybe we get like our visual introductions for our characters as we walk into a spin class, and then the actual discussion of the plan is us on the bikes in a spin class.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm here for this. Well, Brett, it's your spin class. So, we know the end goal is that we're going to establish all of us working together to steal the wizard's fun snow globe. So that's the point we need to reach at the end of the scene, is we need to have that plan and have it ready to be set in motion. So what's the spin class look like, Brett?
Yeah, it's totally empty. But there are a bunch of bikes set up and mirrors all over the wall, so you can see yourself dying in every angle. And Brett's up at the front of the class, and Brett's already going. Class hasn't started yet, but Brett needs to work up a sweat before things kick off. Just like pouring water from the squeeze water bottle over himself as he's like going his hair. I think he's got his hair back in like one of those sweatbands. You see, I'm talking this like this is a fantasy, like, because I've never set foot in a gym in my life. But I imagine this is what it looks like. And there's like something high powered coming over the speaker, like a sort of thing.
Yeah. Beta Zam is in the room with Brett because Beta Zam is Brett's genie. Right. I am, you know, in service to Brett until such a time that that service should end. That's ill-defined. I think that Beta Zam is there to distribute fresh towels. Now, the thing about Beta Zam is that's nearly impossible.
It's like a drippy Steve Buscemi.
Truly moist. He's just so wet. And he is sort of like around the mirrors. And Jewel said something that I absolutely love, is that you can see yourself dying from all angles. The reason that Brett can like afford to run this spin class in this room is these mirrors are enchanted mirrors that show you different ways that you could potentially die. So you are kind of biking, spinning away from your various deaths. Like that's how he's like trying to sell the class, and it's not been a super successful push quite yet, but I got towels in case it becomes more successful.
Can I throw out a character detail to the two of you that I think that has popped into my head that is very funny? Mm.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is the arrangement that Brett has one Brett has one proper wish left and is just not thought to use it. So Beta Zam is just constantly like
just waiting.
It's just like, you know, you can make that a wish. You can wish that.
Yeah, I'm sure Brett has just royally fucked the first couple of wishes.
Well, that's what understand. For me. You fucked them for me because they're supposed to go bad. They're supposed to go really bad. Hasn't happened yet. No ironic lesson yet.
Dude, you teach me so much. Thanks for your help, bro.
I think Flannel's gonna walk in like in a very like appropriate outfit for like this, pretty covered up, but you know, like wearing what people wear here, with a towel around her neck and a whistle around her neck just in case anything goes wrong.
That's appropriate.
Yeah, totally. But is also concerned walking in because saw a sign on the door that said the lights will now be on. And there will be no candles lit, and there will be no there's only one like band that's allowed to play. And so I'm just kind of like walking in, like, did the wizard take away like the things that made this acceptable for me? Because I like to ride in the dark so that I can't see the things.
It's extremely bright in here.
It's very bright. I don't like it. Makes me nervous. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll turn over to Flannel as she walks in. I'll be like, "Hey, stranger who I've never met, go ahead and hop on a bike for your private bike lesson," like winking like really big.
Okay, and I'm going to go towards the back and try to find a bike towards the back.
It's like there are two rows of spin bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
So very empty.
Yeah. I'll be back here.
I think that Spender walks in after that, and Spender is wearing like wearing jeans and a blazer and a t-shirt, right? Like I think that Spender thought that the cover of coming here to do one of Brett's spin classes was just that, like, no one in this town has fun anyway. It doesn't, like, I don't need to pretend that I'm going to a spin class. So he's just dressed in street clothes and fair. Walks in, and it's so bright. They glance at a mirror and see themselves almost get decapitated by looks away before it can even happen. Like, this is not what I expected.
You turn away from that vision of your death right into a slightly soggy towel. Here you are, stranger.
Here I am. Thank you for the tap. Has someone used this already? Is it?
It's fresh. Fresh towel.
Thanks. And mops her face with it anyway, because it's
ooh
polite.
Okay. Oh.
I don't judge.
Looks around all the empty spin bikes and sees Flannel looking extremely uncomfortable and just walks up and takes a bike directly beside her. Like,
"Oh, hi."
"Hi. Hi. Are we supposed to actually, you know?" And like not even on a bike, just pantomimes cycling.
Oh. Cycling. I thought we were supposed to, like, get on the bikes.
I'll be back. And turns around and walks out of the room, and will come back in potentially different attire in a moment.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, this week I would like to draw your attention to a very, very cool bundle that is happening over on Itch that is in support of everything beautiful and wonderful about trans people and is against supporting, everything by J.K. Rowling. So the bundle is called Trans Witches Are Witches, and you can find a link to it in the show notes. In there, you will find upwards of 50 titles, both tabletop titles and digital, from LGBTQIA+ creators. I'm one of those. This bundle was put together with a theme in mind. It's all about witches and wizards, and it is all against the release of the wizard game that has come out recently from J.K. Rowling. If you didn't know, hate to break it to you, J.K. Rowling is a horrific transphobic person, and so this bundle was put together to support a bunch of wonderful queer creators and uplift their voices. The bundle is $60, which is the cost that it would take to get into the wizard game. As well, there is a hardship bundle available for $10. The proceeds from the bundle all go to the creators, so you are directly supporting queer creators with the purchase of this bundle. Let me tell you, it is doing extremely well. It is far outstripping anything that we imagined that it might do, and it's the support that it's going to provide. I can just speak for myself. It's going to provide a lot of support to us. You know, things are tight. Things don't get less expensive. And, you know, the extra money is going to be a huge help. So if you want to check out the link in the show notes, you can just Google trans witches are witches, and you will almost definitely find it. It is well worth your support. Thanks, heroes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And with all that out of the way, let's get back to the show.
As this is unfolding, we are hearing in the background the whirring noise, and then we hear it get slightly louder. Moments after you leave the room, you hear like a series of like rapid crunching or crashing noises, like a. And then we hear the whirring noise back up, and flying into the room on like a helicopter bicycle is Doc, who has proceeded to just like casually pedal this flying bicycle around the room before settling also next to Flannel on the opposite side, but like hovering the bike in the air.
Hi. Hello, stranger.
Salutations, my friend! What a splendiferous day.
Hell yeah, dude, bring your own bike.
A few moments pass, and Spender comes back in wearing just a tank top and running shorts that are cut far, far, far too high. And with like a sweatband around their head, and their jacket is draped over their shoulder, and it looks like it has been cut to ribbons by some type of rotor. Walks over, drapes the jacket over a spare bike, and climbs onto the bike again directly next to Flannel. So it's just this trio of Spender and Flannel, and then Doc up on the floating bike.
I would like to amend something. We said that there were like two rows of bikes. I would prefer there to be like five rows of bikes, and you're all clustered into like one tiny corner.
Yeah.
It's usually the darkest corner, but not today.
The corners are brighter for some reason.
Yep.
It's partially because there's a light bulb on each of the arms of my little helicopter. So now a sort of awkward strobe light effect.
Brett will flip around. Whoa, full class today, dude. Nice.
There's a long wide anime shot just panning across all the empty rows of bikes.
Are we ready to sweat today?
No.
Are we ready to plan a heist?
Way ahead of you, bud.
We're going to sweat and heist at the same time, bros.
Do we have to do the sweating part? I heard we were supposed to.
We need a cover in case, you know, the wizard's agents follow up on us. We're all at a spin class, working really hard, and you can also get some gains while you're at it.
Listen here, Yarn. I don't like you, and you don't like me, and I don't like Thrift, and Thrift doesn't like me, and I don't like Doc, and Doc doesn't like me.
I like you.
And I don't like Brett,
and
Brett doesn't like me, but we're all gonna work together, okay? And then we'll go our separate ways, and we'll never see each other ever again.
Am I the only one that really likes Beta Zam? I thought we had a nice thing going.
He's chill. Moist.
Yeah, he's damp.
Man, you know what I wish? Never mind.
What do you wish? It's important to say stuff like that.
No, forget it. It's stupid. Never mind.
Brett, what did you want to say?
Nothing. I just...
Don't bother. He's a wish tease.
I think the camera then cuts to like halfway through this spin class as Brett is like getting all of us like going and we're trying to plan the heist while we're on these bikes.
We're fucking white. Everyone. Yeah.
It's just, hi. What is it? We need to. Brett, can we slow down? Just what every podcast right. needs is a lot of heavy breathing directly into microphones.
Yeah, a lot of heavy breathing.
We can do yeah. a couple of minutes of low intensity, but then it's back to high and uphill.
What? What is it we need? Betazam, you said. What the fuck are we stealing?
Snow globe. It's like a glass object with scenery and water and glitter inside.
He widens his eyes meaningfully.
What's it do?
It's fun.
Oh, there's no fun anymore, dude.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But if we could get it back, there might be more fun to be had.
Yeah.
And I bet it would really piss him off to know someone else is touching his snow globe.
What?
Yeah.
What do we have against the wizard? You're a genie. You've got cosmic powers. Shit.
I got fucking problems. I got problems. I got problems same as you. Okay? We don't need to get into what the wizard touches. Or my misogynistic possessiveness. We don't need to get into that. What we need to get into is the wizard tower. The most guarded place in all the seven dimensions.
This is a fantastic yeah. opportunity for us to set up some obstacles that we are going to need to overcome as we get into the wizard's tower. If you flip over to slide 6, you'll see a bunch of little squares that say detail on them. We can replace the word detail with whatever the thing actually is. And depending on the difficulty, we will assign it some boxes. So it may need multiple checks to overcome. So as we are all sweating and panting away, I would like each of us to come up with something that we know we are going to have to overcome as we are venturing into the wizard's tower. And I know one thing I would like to see us try and have to do is it doesn't seem like many of us are, well, athletically gifted, yes, Brett definitely is that, but acrobatically gifted, not so sure. And I think that we're just going to call it a fantasy ass laser grid is exactly the kind of thing that I want to see going on here. So let me just double check real quick on difficulties for opposition. Okay. So if this is a minor threat of some kind, right? Something not terribly major. It gets a single box, right? A single check, successful check from someone will overcome this threat. If it is a standard threat, it gets one box per player. Major threats get 2 boxes per player, and severe threats get 3 boxes per player. Severe threats would take us a lot of action to overcome, and that would, like, the final thing should probably be a severe threat, and it should probably be the only one that we face, because that is going to take some rounds to get enough checks to take that down. So just keep that in mind as you are looking at that. Those levels of severity are on page 29 of the PDF if you want to have that on hand yourself. So the fantasy-ass laser grid, that feels like a standard type threat to me. So we're going to say that it is 5 boxes. And I'm just going to represent that by brackets there. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm, cool.
Yeah, I think the fantasy-ass laser grid is, we can add details.
Please,
can we add
please,
details?
Please.
Is that, yeah, this is the Gorgoni Octabyrinth, and it is made out of Gorgon eyes. So they are like lasers, but if you touch them, you turn to stone.
Wow. Ooh. That's tight.
I like it.
So the detail that I would like to add is, you know how in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, like, you have to do part of the game upside down? Part of the wizard's fortress is upside, like, there's an upside down, you have to, like, navigate an upside down Castlevania castle.
Jeff, can I layer on to that much like in Castlevania, when you get through the castle, you then have to do it again, but upside down.
That's great.
So
yes.
all of the challenges that are in front of us, we have to do the upside down version of them, boss rush style.
Yeah. That feels great. That feels fantastic.
That also feels like a final thing, maybe. Like, yeah. That feels like more. Mm-hmm. It's at least going to be a major threat, I think. It's going to at least be 10 boxes. Okay.
Then why don't we hold on to that one for now?
Yeah. I like it.
I truly love it.
Pop it in there and pop 10 boxes on that. Because we know what the obstacles are, but they're all backwards and flipped. Mm-hmm. It's very good. A sentient
what
is being written here? This is amazing.
That will kick your ass.
Oh yeah.
So I went with a sentient moon that will kick your ass in honor of my dear friend Jeff Stormer.
The moon is to kick your ass.
it will kick your ass unless you solve a riddle. So we do have to deal with a riddle.
Okay, of course.
Just kick the moon's ass. We have approaches, and that's what matters.
Yeah. Okay. So I will then. I think that if we're able to solve the riddle, it's just a minor threat, right? It's just a single box. Yeah. You solve the riddle, good to go. If we attempt to kick the moon's ass, then that's going to be a standard threat. So we've got two different tracks we can.
Okay, I like that.
We can approach there. We have the riddle. Spell riddle properly, and then ass kicking.
Fabulous.
All right, so we have two more obstacles that we need. What else are we thinking?
I think so.
No, please.
Brett used to be one of the wizard's apprentices. Mm-hmm. So I think the wizard has a team of young wizards called the Wiz Kids. And they are like sort of his main security force.
Mm.
All right, I'm already writing that down for you. The Wiz Kids. Is that feeling like a standard threat to you?
Yeah.
Five boxes? Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that, they're multiple threats. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
That's real good.
Yeah, dude.
It's gotta.
It has to be. So, yes.
Yeah.
An underwater level of the castle you have to pass through, but it's also full of snakes. Water snakes.
Truly?
Yeah.
The like worst video game nonsense.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous.
All in one place.
Yeah.
Oh, it's also an escort mission somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no, please. Oh, no. Man. I hate those.
We'll have to see where the driving level fits into this game.
Yeah.
And if you like walk too far away from the escort, you get like an alert that's like, I can't find you.
They spent a long time walking into a wall.
Oh, it's, man.
So bad.
I am going to, and you all take a look at this as I am. I'm going to put some arrows in here using the wonderful technology that we have available to us. And you all can let me know what you think the, if this makes sense as a progression for this story, since we're doing this all together. But it seems to make sense to me that we do the fancy ass laser grid, right? That's like that's the security system you have to bypass first. You get past that and you have to talk to the sentient moon that will kick your ass unless you solve a riddle. That immediately proceeds to the underwater level of the castle that you have to pass through, but it's also full of snakes. It may also be an escort mission. It really just depends on how things fall out with the moon, I guess. then we have to face the Whiz Kids, and I really do appreciate whoever put a Z on kids as opposed to the S that I typed, that it's an upgrade in the strictest sense
of the
word.
Had to be done.
And then we have the upside down Castlevania castle as the last thing before we get to whatever the final challenge will be. And I think right now we'll hold off on defining that final challenge. I'm sure there will be details we can draw upon from this experience that we can build that with. And also, depending on how much time we have, right, we may not be able to do a big knockdown drag out thing with three boxes per player to get through. So we'll let the constraints of reality dictate that. That sound good to everybody?
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Then we're sweating our asses off. We have talked about all these things that we have to overcome. How does this scene in the spin class wrap up for us?
The detail that I want to throw out that's very important that also gives us a segue is everybody is sweating and miserable except Doc, and we finally pan up a little bit and see that Doc is sitting cross-legged on the bike seat of his flying bicycle. He is eating a little like raspberry jam cream cake. And specifically, he has deployed two little robot legs that are pedaling the bike, and so he's just sitting eating the cake.
Amazing.
I feel like I'm gonna throw up.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of most of you. All right, those of you that didn't take any shortcuts today.
That king, the wizard, took everything from me, and I want to see him dead and in the ground, and I will not rest until I burn the memory of everything that he's ever loved. And if that means smashing that snow globe into the ground, then so help me, with my dying breath, I will make this happen. Would anyone like some cake?
I can't touch that stuff, dude, but I'm with you. I'm up to my neck in student loans because of that wizard.
You deserve better than this, Brett.
I do. You know, sometimes
the wizard took everything? Everything you've ever loved?
Well, just the loans.
I mean, my store, which was full of like many little toys and gizmos. I built a lot of the toys and gizmos again, but I
did you love my wife? You saying you love my wife?
Wait, did the
respectfully, no comment.
Did the wizard steal your wife?
Logically, it doesn't follow. Just because the wizard took everything he loved doesn't mean he loves everything the wizard has.
Hey, congratulations.
Okay, logic checks out. That logic checks out.
Just trying to help.
That took a lot out of you to acknowledge that she was right about that. You okay over there? You're looking paler than usual.
I don't even have legs, but they're so tired.
Look, all I know is that anyone that goes in there is going to come out absolutely cursed. We all know. This is all the stories. So I have to do something to make sure that we do not. Do you want a wizard's curse? Any of you?
No.
No, dude.
All right. So,
does he want it?
What?
Does he want the? I'll take it from him if he wants it.
Okay, that's not. Do I need to define the word curse?
Yeah, it's not the ability to curse. It's being cursed. It's not something you want.
All right, I followed that logic. Now that tracks.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, if you want to avoid the curse, I guess just follow my lead when we get in there. And I think that's a good point to just cut to us in the first room. What does everyone look like as we're entering? What does it look like to enter the wizard's tower?
I mean, I got real Castlevania vibes from this. Mm. I kind of feel like it's a low-level like cover of a metal album.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the big tower, a lot of red lightning, and constantly rolling thunderclouds.
but also like not in a cool, fun way.
Oh yeah,
that's important.
Yeah,
yeah.
Real stick in the mud stuff.
Yeah.
With all that in front of us, what does the Gorgoni Octabyrinth? what is it like? Are there like Medusa statues, like just standing out in front of the place?
I think they're like just like Gorgon eyes embedded in the walls.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and they're all in different, they're looking in different directions. Mm-hmm. So you,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
All right, fantastic. Where is Doc positioned? How's Doc set up?
I think that is the castle on the hill or is it in the sky?
Oh.
This is important.
Hmm.
That is important. Jules, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's in the sky, and we had to take like a broom bus to get here.
All right.
There's a regular broom bus that goes
it's
here. A regular,
it stops at the Wizard Tower, yeah.
That's great.
So we're disembarking from the broom bus, and Doc, what's your sitch?
Doc has like walked off of the bus, adjusted his suit coat, cracks his neck a little bit, looks around, I think takes out like a smidgen of his fairy dust and blows on it, and we kind of see a little bit of magic and we see some flashes of a fairy court, but it's primarily just there to illuminate the lasers. It's not, very pointedly not using it for magic. And is looking around, sees the eyes, pauses for a second, goes, you see this? These are Gorgon eyes. This is a cruel and malicious little toy, and to take down this, you need a toy maker.
This episode of One Shot features music from the following artists: Focuser by Neon Beach, and Fearless by Anthony Catacoli. This episode of One Shot was edited and sound designed by Tracy Barnett. You can find more of their work online anywhere at The Other Tracy. That's it for One Shot this week, but don't worry, we'll be back with part 2 of Into the Wizard's Tower next week. As usual, we end One Shot with a call to action, and heroes, this one is terrifying and absolutely wild. So you may have heard that there was a train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. That is sort of south of Youngstown and close to the Pennsylvania border. Well, this train derailment happened. There were a lot of hazardous chemicals on the train itself, and instead of trying to clean them up in order to open the rail cars faster or the railroad faster, they just burned them off. And there is essentially a huge chemical disaster that's happening in eastern Ohio, and it is getting not nearly enough coverage. So your call to action this week is going to be to use whatever platform you have, social media, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, all of it. Find stories about this and keep letting people know that this is happening, because we have to hold the government accountable for this. You see, there was an almost railway strike not too long ago, and the kinds of protections that could have helped prevent this disaster, well, that was part of what the railway workers were striking for. And the president worked with the lobbyists and the rail companies to keep the rails open, and now this is happening, and they're deliberately not talking about it, which is horrific and horrible. So in addition to broadcasting news about this story, please also contact your representatives, especially if you listen to this and you live anywhere near eastern Ohio, because the congressional representative for that area is silent about it right now. This is a horrible disaster, and I encourage you to do whatever you can to help hold those in power accountable who were responsible for this. Thanks, heroes.
As always, a humble and hearty thanks to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to help us in a non-monetary way, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Every 5-star review we get helps new people find the show. For the latest One-Shot news, be sure to follow me on Twitter at OneShotRPG. Look us up on Facebook at facebook.com/OneShotPod, or look for news on the site at OneShotPodcast.com. If you want to inquire about ad rates, live appearances, commissioning episodes, or you have a general question or comment for the show, contact us at GameMaster@OneShotPodcast.com. One Shot is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in association with Paracosm Press. Paracosm Press is a Chicago-based tabletop games publisher. You can find more information at paracosmpress.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Adventure by Be Your Own Pet, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes.
Design Doc started as a podcast about designing a role-playing game. Over the years, it's turned into so much more. It's a show about the challenges of burnout, making money from creative projects, and what goes into bringing a game to life. Come along with Hannah and Evan in a living documentation of the game design process. One review described it as the audio equivalent of taking a hike with a good friend. You can search for Design Doc on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.